You have your Bibles with you today. I'd ask you to go ahead and open them and put your bookmark, if you would, in Philippians chapter 2. Actually, if the page in your Bible in Philippians 2 kind of divides there, we're going to be looking specifically at the latter part of Philippians 2. So if you'll put your bookmark there, you'll be ready to go as we study together. Mark has our memory verse for us on the board. We are talking this year about becoming new men in Christ, specifically from Ephesians. And for the month of January, we are trying to focus upon the idea of walking worthy of the calling. And so our memory verse from Ephesians 4 and verse 1, if you want to say this together with me, please. I therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you to walk worthy of the calling with which you were called. And yes, that's in the New King James Version today. And Chris, you messed me up big time Wednesday night. Chris Wednesday night had us do the memory verse from the New American Standard, which doesn't read anything like that. And so you can thank me later that we've got the New King James up there, that's the version we're working on. So I hope you're doing well today. I appreciate you being here. We want to welcome those that are watching at home. We got a lot of folks out, either with COVID or have been exposed to somebody who has COVID, or been exposed to somebody who's been exposed to somebody who's been exposed to somebody who had COVID. It's a hard time to know when you should be in and when you should be out. And so I certainly respect everybody's efforts in that regard. So if you're watching from home this morning, we appreciate that you are tuning in. I want to begin this morning by asking you a question. I want everybody to think about this. I want our young people to stop what you're doing for a minute. I want you to think about the question that I'm about to ask. And I want you to consider this question relative to everything you're involved in your life. Whether you think of yourself relative to your family, whether you think of yourself relative to your job, whether you think of yourself relative to school, whether you think of yourself relative to some organization that you are a part of, that you feel strongly about, regardless of the way you see yourself in your various aspects of life, here's my question. Which of those things would you die for? I don't offer that with any sense of hyperbole or drama. I'm asking you to think about the things in your life that you would really die for. Now, file that away, because we're going to come back to that. We are living in an age that, and this has been noted. John Tom noted this. Devin has noted this regularly. I make no apology for noting it again, because it is so influential. We're living in an age where a circumstance of life, a pandemic, has impacted the lives of almost every human being on the face of the earth. And I would say, at least in the civilized world, this is true. That we have been impacted in a way that most of us have never seen in our lifetime. And when it comes to religion, especially, the impact that COVID has had upon local churches, upon individuals, it's like nothing I've ever seen. Now, among brethren who have identified themselves with churches of Christ through your lifetime, if you're old enough, you would have lived through and would remember well the divisions that took place among brethren in the 50s and 60s. And for some people, you might think, okay, that's the most impactful thing I've seen among Christians in my lifetime. I was a kid at the end of that. I do very well remember some of that. I didn't live through the worst of it, and so I can't compare this to that, but I can say this. In my nearly 60 years, I've never seen anything impact people of faith the way this has impacted people of faith. And there's a lot of reasons for that, because when COVID started and it first began to spread, we didn't know how bad it was. It was what was initially called a novel virus, and for good reason. It was new, and so people were afraid. People were nervous. People were anxious. The world almost shut down for a while, and so we were isolated, people were stressed, people were divided in a lot of ways, both in regards to politics, in regards to racial things, in regards to economic things, in regards to national things, and much of which grew out of the anxiety and the stress and the fear that was prompted because there's a disease out there and we don't know what it's going to do to us. And so for Christians, I think, what's happened in the last 2 years is our trust in God has been tested in ways that many people had never experienced before. Our habits have been tried. I think a lot of people, this is my opinion, I freely offer it, you're free to disagree with it, but I think for a lot of people, the habit of quote-unquote going to church was broken. And what's happened is, for a lot of people, what we've come to realize is Christianity was a habit more than a conviction. I don't know who all that applies to, but I would ask you to give some consideration to your life and how it's impacted you. I think for nearly everyone, consistency and commitment and priority have been exposed. What's really important in life has come to the fore as a result of the circumstances that we live in. And apathy has kind of filled the void in a lot of people's lives. Now, John Tom mentioned some of this. I mentioned again just for illustration's sake. It's interesting what COVID did to attendance. Do you realize in the first year of COVID that for nearly every religious organization in this country that's identified with Christianity, attendance to any kind of service when they started again was down by 60%. That's an astounding number to me. And as things somewhat returned to some sense of normalcy, what's evened out over the last couple of years is that for most religious organizations, the average is that somewhere in the vicinity of 30 to 35% of members have been lost. People have just quit. They're not to be found anymore. And I would say if you look at our attendance, that's probably about right for us. Before COVID, we were looking at 100, 140, 145 people on a pretty average good Sunday morning. And now a really good Sunday, we might have 120, but 100 to 110 is more normal. And that's probably 30 to 35%. And long term, churches are hurting. I went to the doctor the other day, and he knows I'm a preacher, and he said, "Well, how's the pandemic impacted y'all?" And I said, "Well, we've got some folks that we don't see very much anymore. We've got some folks we haven't seen at all." Interestingly enough, and this tells you the way the religion is in most of the world, his next question was, "Are y'all hurting financially?" I thought, what does that have to do with anything? But that's the way that most people think about religion. And I was glad to be able to say, you know, our folks are still giving. But what's happened, it seems to me, is that the trend in religion towards spectatorship, which was already taking place. I mean, before COVID struck, if you look at most religious organizations who identify themselves as Christian, what you will find is what's promoted, what's published, what's worked on, what's encouraged is spectator religion. Come and be entertained. And you see it in the light and smoke shows that you find in most religious organizations, bands and various and sundry plays and all kinds of efforts to get people to come and watch. That's what's happened in religion. And let me suggest to you that even among our brethren, that's a temptation. If we're going to have a meeting, we want somebody to knock our socks off, don't we? If it's singing, oh, we want the singing to be dramatic. We work a lot more on the music than we do on the words sometimes. And all of that goes to this. We like the entertainment value that comes from worship. But I'm going to tell you what concerns me more than that is that what live streaming has done And it's very valuable for folks that are sick, for folks that are shut in. But it has promoted some degree of apathy and spectatorship. I just don't really feel like getting up today. I think I'll just tune in. And I want to be as kind as I can in saying this. That's not worship in the New Testament sense of the term. It is not gathering with God's people to collectively work together and encourage one another to raise our voices in thanksgiving and to consider one another to love and provoke to love and good works. And those are the kinds of things that concern me. And very often, let me stay with me. Very often, I think when preachers start addressing this, our first thought is, oh no, here we go, we're getting hammered about attendance again. Well, I'm going to tell you, if you got some considerations about attendance, go listen to John Tom's lesson from a couple of weeks ago, because he did an excellent job making some points about attendance in this day and age. My concern is not only for attendance. In fact, I would say my concern this morning is something far greater than attendance. It's involvement. What has COVID done to involvement? Because I'm going to tell you something, folks. If we're not engaged collectively, and I'm talking about involvement with a local church, and for our folks that are members of this congregation, I'm talking about our involvement with this local church. Don't be generic. Don't start looking around. Don't think of other groups. Think of you and me and our relationship to one another. I want us to appreciate that if we're not engaged collectively, the chances are really, really good that we're not going to be very engaged individually. I know we have this idea that we can all serve independently, and I'm going to be faithful to the Lord. And you may not give up on the Lord. You may not change what you think or what you believe. But I promise you, you're going to go through times where you need edification, where you need the collectivity, and I would go even farther than that and say the collectivity needs you. So if we're not engaged collectively, we're not going to be engaged very long individually. And what COVID has exploited in local churches, in my mind, is an isolationist, independent selfishness, where we think about ourselves and what's happening in our life, and we don't think about others and what's happening in their life or our relationship or responsibilities to such. And let me suggest to you, selfishness is the greatest threat you will ever face to your faith. The normal challenges of life, which we've been talking about a lot in regards to our Psalms class, whether it's mistreatment or discouragement or despondency or lack of enthusiasm, the normal things, these happen regardless of an epidemic going on around us and how the epidemic has affected us. They are challenging to deal with, but I'm going to tell you, folks, when we become focused upon ourselves, all those regular challenges become much, much greater. Much greater. And that observation has been made repeatedly in the Psalms class, and I appreciate the guys making sure and mentioning that. That the problems that we have that discourage us and dissuade us and cause us to be despondent and feel mistreated are very often problems that come in part because we only think about what's happening in our life. And here's my concern and observation about how that impacts a local church. My own consistency, and I will speak of myself, and I hope you'll make the application to yourself. My own consistency or lack thereof, my own priority or lack thereof, my own commitment or lack thereof, and my own honesty or lack thereof has been put to the test. We give ourselves to what's important. I don't mean that we show up for what's important. Again, it's not about attendance. It's about involvement. We give ourselves to what's important. If school's important in the face of COVID, we'll send our kids to school. If work is important in the face of COVID, we'll get up and go to work. If travel is important in the midst of COVID, we'll get on an airplane. If sports is important in the midst of COVID, we'll go to the ball game. We'll make sure the kids are still playing and that we're still in the stand screaming. If my friends are important, I'll go out and eat in a restaurant full of people that I don't know. And so I ask, here's the test of honesty and priority and consistency and commitment. When we'll do all of that, why do we not engage with our brethren? And I come back to the question I started with. What would you die for? In Philippians chapter 2, at the very end of the chapter, Paul offers a note of, as much anything else, explanation to the church at Philippi. And he says in Philippians chapter 2, beginning in verse 25, I considered it necessary to send to you Epaphroditus, my brother, fellow worker, and fellow soldier, but your messenger and the one who ministered to my need, since he was longing for you all and was distressed because you heard that he was sick. Indeed, he was sick, almost unto death. But God had mercy on him, and not only on him, but on me also, lest I should have sorrow upon sorrow. Therefore, I send him the more eagerly, that when you see him again, you may rejoice, and I may be less sorrowful. Therefore, receive him in the Lord with all gladness, and hold such men in esteem, because for the work of Christ, he came close to death, not regarding his life, to supply what was lacking in your service toward me. I want to make a couple of observations about Epaphroditus that I think are especially pertinent in the circumstance in which we find ourselves right now. And I would like all of us to give some reflection to ourselves and to what we're doing with ourselves and with our life and our consistency and our priority in the face of a pandemic. And I recognize the fear. I recognize all of them. I'm not saying that there's nothing in this pandemic that's not arresting. What I am saying is I want us to measure ourselves relative to this man. And I want to start this way. There are two admonitions in Philippians that precede chapter 2 and Paul's comments about Epaphroditus. I want you to see them very quickly. So open your Bible up. I want you to go back to Philippians chapter 1. Paul begins this letter essentially by reflecting upon the fact that he's in prison in Rome and that his imprisonment has impacted a lot of people for good, and that he is uncertain as to what's going to happen to him. He's not sure if he's going to live or if he's going to die. He is prepared for both. He anticipates being released. And when you get to chapter 1, then in verse 27, he offers an admonition to the people of Philippi. Only let your conduct be worthy of the gospel of Christ, so that whether I come and see you or am absent, I may hear of your affairs, that you stand fast in one spirit, with one mind, striving together for the faith of the gospel, and not in any way terrified by your adversaries, which is to them a proof of perdition, but to you of salvation, and that from God. For it's been granted to you on behalf of Christ not only to believe in him, but also to suffer for his sake, having the same conflict which you saw in me and now here is in me. I want you to think about that admonition for a moment, where he says, I want you to walk worthy, or I want you to live worthy. I want your conduct to be worthy. Very similar to our memory verse for this month. And the thought is very similar, but there is a glaring difference that doesn't show up in our English language. The word, let your conduct be worthy. The word conduct there is a very particular word, and it addresses behavior as a citizen. That's literally what it means. That let the way you act as a citizen be worthy of the gospel. Now, what that means is live in such a way that's appropriate to who you are as a citizen. I want to propose to you that would be a big deal to the Philippians. Philippi was a Roman colony. If you go back to Acts chapter 16, and I recognize this is political, and it may not mean much to you, but I think it's important to the thought. And being a Roman colony meant that the citizens of Philippi were just like the citizens of the city of Rome. They were considered to have all of the privileges and rights and responsibilities as a citizen in Rome. And if you go back to Acts chapter 16, you'll see some interesting things there. Paul is arrested and thrown in prison, and the accusation that's made against him when he goes to Philippi is they are encouraging laws and customs that aren't lawful for us as Romans. They're doing things that are counter to who we are as citizens of Rome. That was the charge that's against him. And so he's thrown in prison, and when they come the next day to let him out, what he tells them is, do you just beat every Roman that comes to town? If your leaders want me to leave, they can come take me out because they've beat us and we're Romans. And buddy, that got their attention. It meant something to the people of Philippi to be a citizen of Rome. And so when Paul writes to them, what he says is, I want you to take this idea of citizenship and the fact that you're Romans and how big a deal that is to you, and I want you to live in such a way that shows who you are, not as citizens of Rome, but as citizens of the kingdom of heaven. And so that idea of living like who you are is very prominent. In fact, you get over Philippians chapter 3, and he says, our citizenship is in heaven. And so that's an important idea. And then if you get there, go back to chapter 1, I want you to notice how he says to do that. I want you to stand fast, verse 27, stand fast in one spirit, with one mind, striving together for the faith, and not in any way terrified. So here's what he encourages in them. Okay, you are citizens of the kingdom of heaven, even though you're living in a Roman colony, and that's going to promote some difficulty. Your king is God, their king is Caesar. I got in trouble for it. Notice as he says at the end of chapter 1, having the same conflict that you saw in me. Imagine if, as American citizens, and we said, well, first and foremost, I'm a citizen of the kingdom of heaven, and the local magistrate said, well, wait a minute, you're a seditionist because you're living in this country, and yet you're claiming another king. Paul got in trouble for that all the time. And so what's going to happen is we're going to throw you in jail if you don't straighten up and decide who you are really loyal to. That would be the parallel for us. And so what Paul says is, I want you to stand up, I want you to stand together, and I don't want you to be afraid even though conflict is here. Okay? Now I want you to go to chapter 2 and recognize the second admonition. The second admonition, beginning in verse 1, is you need to be humble and help one another. So it begins in chapter 2 and verse 1. If there's any consolation in Christ, if any comfort of love, if any fellowship of the Spirit, if any affection and mercy, fulfill my joy by being like-minded, having the same love, being of one accord, of one mind. Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem other better than himself. Let each one of you look out not only for his own interest, but also for the interests of others. Now he's told them, you're going to be in conflict. Don't be afraid. And we've already talked about what happens when we get afraid. What's COVID done to it? It's caused us to be isolated and self-obsessed. And Paul says, here's what I want you to do. You look out for one another. You be humble. No self-service. No paying attention to just yourself. You better pay attention to one another. Verse 5, he uses Jesus as an illustration. He says, let this mind be you in you, which was in Christ, who being in the form of God, didn't consider it robbery, but equal with God, made himself of no reputation, took on the form of a bondservant, and coming in the likeness of men, being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even the death on the cross. Why? To serve you. To serve me. He humbled himself. It was a scary thing. He had to die. There was plenty of reason for him to bow the knee to God in the Garden of Gethsemane and say, if it's possible, let this cup pass from me. Because as a man, what Jesus faced had to be scary. But he humbled himself to God and served anyway. And then Paul, as he moves forward, interestingly enough, by the way, verses 12 and 13 and 14, he says, you work at your own salvation, but you do it without complaining and disputing, and you be lights in the world. I find this very ironic where he's telling us, look out for one another, but then he says, you better do what you have to do, and you better not complain about it. You need to remember that you're an influence in the world. And let me ask this question while we're right here. Right now, among your peers, who are you influencing towards faith in God in the midst of the pandemic that we're in? Because that's the point he makes to them. You better figure out what you can do in serving other people and in serving God so that you are blameless and harmless and lights in the world and you're not griping about it. And then he offers himself as an example. I'm pouring out myself as a drink offering. And then he even offers Timothy as an example. Nobody's like Timothy who's like-minded, who will love you more than he loves himself. And then he says, now, it was necessary that I send Epaphroditus. And you may think, what does all that have to do with Epaphroditus? I want you to see three things. And no, I'm not going to take 15 minutes for each point. I want you to see three things he says about Epaphroditus that you and I can learn from in the midst of a circumstance very similar to Epaphroditus' circumstance. Number one, Epaphroditus is noted as a brother, verse 25. A brother, a fellow worker, a fellow soldier, a messenger, and a minister. I want to suggest to you it was not a wise time to be affiliated with Paul. Paul's in Rome in prison. He's been accused over and over and over of sedition. The Jews accuse him to the Roman authorities in Jerusalem and Caesarea as being a plague on the earth and leading an insurrection among the Jews all over the world. Basically what they said is, he's riling up the Jews and y'all are going to have to deal with it. He's causing problems in Thessalonica, first in Acts chapter 17. He's accused of promoting another king besides Caesar. Over and over and over, every time you turn around, Paul's being accused of causing trouble. And I know he's in his own hired house, but if you go back to chapter 1, he talks about being in chains. He talks about the Praetorian Guard, which was Caesar's personal bodyguard. And those are the people he's having to deal with because he is in prison. Now let me ask you, if you knew somebody that was in prison for treason against the United States of America, let's just say that they incited the riots in Washington, D.C. a year ago. That's been big in the news lately. Let's just say you knew the person who incited the riots, and everybody knew that he incited the riots, and you decided, you know what, I'm not only going to go visit him in prison, I'm going to be united with him. That's the word fellow. Fellow worker, fellow soldier. I want everybody to see that I am united with him in his cause. I'm going to fight together and I'm going to work together. Do you think Epaphroditus took some risks in going to Rome to help Paul? Do you think that that was the least bit scary for him? And yet, what Paul says is, in spite of the circumstances, even to the point that he becomes sick and almost dies. I don't know why. I don't know if it was the conditions of travel. I don't have any idea. But what I do know is he's going to a difficult place under scary circumstances, traveling under difficult circumstances, and he nearly died because he was a fellow worker and messenger and soldier and minister. So here's my question. Does this describe my spiritual life? You remember chapter 1 when he said, I beg you to walk worthy and stand fast and help one another and be united even in the face of conflict, even though you may be afraid? Epaphroditus is the example of that to those people in Philippi, and that raises the question for us. I want you to wake up and I want you to ask yourself this question. Does that describe me and my service to God's people in the face of difficulty and fear? Second observation. If you look back at the text and you look at verse 26, He was longing for you all and was distressed because you had heard that he was sick. The word longing means to intensely yearn for something. And what Paul says is, Epaphroditus, as a member of the church in Philippi, he has been sent from the Philippians to try to help Paul, to take money or support or whatever Paul was needing. And yet he got sick, and Epaphroditus finds out that everybody back home realizes he's sick. And it says he's longing for y'all because, as he goes on to say in verse 26, he was distressed because you heard he was sick. That's interesting to me. It doesn't say Epaphroditus was distressed because he was sick. It says he was distressed because he heard that you heard he was sick. Here he is, he's nearly dying. Paul says that later. And yet, what is he worried about? Is he worried about himself and his own condition? No, he's worried about the folks back home being discouraged. He is more concerned about what happens at Philippi and his impact upon them than he is about his own circumstances. He's not discouraged by what's going on with him. He's worried about the church being discouraged about what's going on with him. Remember chapter 2, beginning in verse 1? Don't think about yourself. Be humble, be lowly, consider one another. That's exactly what Epaphroditus was doing. And so that raises question number 2. Does this describe my relationship to this spiritual family? I'm going to tell you, folks, this is challenging stuff. Devin would say, this is powerful right here. And it is powerful because what Paul is challenging in us by telling us and telling the Philippians about Epaphroditus is, here's somebody that's more worried about everybody else than he is about himself, and he's about to die. Or he came close to dying. And that's not the way this pandemic has worked for us, is it? Today, are you more worried about everybody else in this congregation than you are about yourself? Look around the building. Are you more worried about everybody else, their spiritual state, their encouragement, their discouragement, where they stand before God, where our future is as a group of Christians? Are you more worried about that than you are about yourself? Well, I was exposed. I understand you're exposed. I was exposed too. I was living with a woman for a week that had it. Well, but I kind of worry about my health. Well, I worry about my health too. You know, I lost my dad. My mom's in their mid-80s. I don't want to expose her to something that's going to kill her. But I'll tell you what I told Tracy the other day. You know, something's going to get me. I want to make sure that I'm right with God when whatever it is that gets me, gets me. And I'm going to tell you, that is an idea that has been lost because we are so obsessed with what's happening out there and not with what's happening here. Third observation. Look at verse 29 and 30. Paul says, and you would think he wouldn't have to say this, but he does. Receive him therefore in the Lord with all gladness and hold such men in esteem, because for the work of Christ he came close to death, not regarding his life, to supply what was lacking in your service toward me. I've been chewing on this last couple of verses for several days. To hold someone in esteem, the word hold means to possess, and esteem is that which is dear. Who do you hold in esteem? I think for most of us, when we think about people that we esteem, that we hold up as valuable, as significant, as influential, as someone that I might want to follow, someone worthy of emulation or idolizing, when we esteem people, I'd be interested in what our standards very often are. Is it money? You know, a successful businessman, they're worthy of some degree of appreciation and respect because they figured out how to run their business in a very successful way, and we very often esteem that. Maybe it's someone in a position in our community, someone who has done a lot of philanthropic work, someone who has risen in position and influence. Maybe they're in the local government and they're trying to make things better, and we hold them in high regard. Maybe it's somebody like what we're seeing in the pandemic right now, a lot of these what are called frontline medical workers who are working with very sick people day in and day out, and for many of them putting their own health at risk. And man, those people are worthy of our emulation. Maybe it's something far less than that. Maybe it's a coach. Oh, he taught me the game. And I just will always hold him in high regard. Maybe it's some high society person in Lumberton or Sour Lake or Beaumont. Somebody, they're awesome. How often is the person that you esteem, and let's take that one farther, not only that you personally, Tracy, there we go, not only that you, it's okay, I'm okay, all right? Not only that you, if you were asleep, I just nearly fell down, all right? Not only that you personally regard, but that you want to make sure your family gets to know and regard, that you want to make sure your children get to know this person right here because they are worthy of our esteem, that you want to introduce your friends to, that you want to make sure your coworkers know this person. How often is it somebody whose only virtue in life is that they would die for God's people? I'm going to tell you, folks, what concerns me. And it concerns me to see so many of our members here, and this is true elsewhere, but here, we introduce our kids, we idolize, we want to spend our time, we want to give our attention, we want to associate with all these people in the world that we consider so very important, and we don't engage with one another. Why is that? Why is it that we don't esteem the folks that are, you know, somebody's sick, buddy, they're taking them food. Well, that's a person worthy of esteem. Well, so somebody's been kind of down, but you know, before I could ever call them, so-and-so's already called them. That's a person worthy of esteem. Somebody that, yeah, they're kind of concerned about life and their business and their health, and they've got some issues, but I'm going to tell you what, they're at Bible class on Wednesday night because they want other people to see this is important. I want you to think about these older folks for a moment, especially the young married people and the teenagers. Do you realize for these older folks for whom life has changed a lot, they're not getting up and going to work every day. They're not often noticed for what they do and who they are. And when they come to services, it encourages them to know that there are other people out there trying to serve the Lord, and it discourages them when folks don't show up who claim to be Christians, or folks don't call who claim to be Christians, or folks don't come visit them who claim to be Christians, or folks who are completely uninvolved in their lives who claim to be Christians. See, it's not just about attendance. And so my question to end is, am I living the kind of life that I would be held in high esteem by other Christians just because of my spiritual work? And do I hold in high esteem people whose only designation in life is they are servants of God's people? I don't know if COVID is Satan's doing. I don't know if it's a day of the Lord from God. I don't know if it's just life under the sun. I really don't. I don't know why we're dealing with what we're dealing with. But I want to reiterate what I said at the beginning. I'm nearly 60 years old. I'm not old yet, but I ain't young anymore. I've been around long enough to see some things. I've never seen anything like this. And I have watched Christians here and elsewhere who have allowed the circumstances of life to completely dominate their spiritual lives. Some of them just don't come at all, don't engage at all, you don't hear from them, you can't talk to them. Some come, but what's really important has been exposed, and they don't miss the stuff they don't want to miss, but well, we're going to have a guest speaker, and they're really going to be encouraging to us. Well, I don't have time for that because I've got this over here. I'm not scared of that, but I am scared of church. I'm not trying to make anybody mad, although I'm sure I have, but sometimes the truth does that. What I'm trying to do is to get you to reflect upon what Paul wrote to that church in Philippi. It was hard to be a Christian in Philippi. They were facing suffering. And Paul says, I want you to remember the citizens you really are, and I want you to stand fast, and I want you to help one another, and I want you to humble yourselves, and I want you to think of one another, and I'm sending you Epaphroditus because I thought that was necessary, because he is the man that I have just described. And what we need in local churches is a room full of folks like Epaphroditus. And so I ask you to reflect upon yourself. Folks, we're going to die. Yeah, maybe you'll die from COVID. And if you run off and say, well, Russ said we need to come to church even though we die from COVID. Okay. But I'm going to be where I need to be. And I'm going to be involved with God's people. And that may expose me to all kinds of dangers. You know, we're worried about a pandemic. They were worried about somebody breaking down their door, hauling them off to prison, and crucifying them. And we're scared. We can't make time for spiritual things? We can't engage. We can't invite somebody. Imagine what the world would be like if they looked at us and saw, that's a group of people right there have their eyes on heaven. And they're trying to tell the lost about Jesus Christ and that there's nothing in this life that's worth being afraid of. And maybe you'll survive COVID and maybe you won't. All that's really important is where you stand before God, and we need each other to stand before God. So I beg you. Let's put fear and anxiety and stress and all this garbage behind us. Yeah, if you're exposed, you need to isolate for 5 days. I'm not suggesting that kind of stuff. Come on, be reasonable. What I am suggesting is let's be consistent about what's important, and let's make us and the work of our God and our King important enough to be first. So let's encourage one another to that, can we? Thanks for your attention this morning. If we could help you in your service to God, we invite you to respond to the invitation while we...
Jesus, the loving shepherd, calleth thee now to come into the...